Okay, 1 Corinthians chapter 11. Now, last week, Joe covered chapter 10. But I can't remember, Joe, if you finished chapter 10 or not. You did. Okay. So if you finished chapter 10, you did verse 1 of chapter 11. Okay. Oh, you didn't? Who did? Oh, okay. I can't remember either. Anyway, I thought it was Joe. Sorry, Joe. My apologies. So anyway, just wanted to say that because verse 1 of chapter 11 is really, should be the last verse in chapter 10. And it seems, everybody seems to agree that they put the divider at the wrong place here. So we can read verse 1. It says, "Be imitators of me, even as I also am of Christ." And this is Paul speaking, of course. And this goes back to chapter 10, and Paul tells them to follow his example, and in so doing, they would copy Christ. So anyway, this would mean that they would, as he follows Christ, Christ was a servant to God. And so that just goes in chapter 10. So now we start in chapter 2 of verse 11, verse 2 of chapter 11. So now if I get confused today and say things backwards and around in the wrong way, well, you can correct me or just try to follow me and we'll get it straightened out. My wife says I do this all the time. So anyway, verse 2 of chapter 11. So we're going to start out this way, introducing the first section, part 1, regarding the veiling of women. And if for those that's been in the church for a while, I'm sure you'll realize, as I said, this has stirred some controversy, and I don't know if we've had any problems here with it. But anyway, it's going to be talking about the veiling of women. And if you see this woman here, I could ask the question, is she veiled? And there could be two ways of looking at that, and we're going to get right into that as we go through the chapter, and we'll understand a little more about it later on. So, starting then in verse 2, he says here, "Now I praise you, brethren, that you remember me in all things and keep the traditions just as I delivered them to you." So Paul starts with a tact of generosity here. And when you start this way, you just put everybody at ease. When you start out and you can praise somebody for something, even though you may want to, so to speak, get on them or talk to them about something serious, something that's going to be somewhat controversial, when you can find something to praise them about, it really sets the mood a lot different. So traditions here means precepts, ordinances, and doctrine. And I want you to note on this is not doctrines of men that he's talking about here, or traditions of men, I should have said. This is not traditions of men. When we talk about traditions, we generally think traditions of men, but this is not traditions of men. This is doctrine, and the doctrine delivered by Paul, the apostle, the inspired writer of God's word. And Paul defends his right as an apostle many times, and he lets everybody know, he's without any uncertain terms, that he is an apostle just the same as the 11 other apostles. So in verse 3 there, he says, "But I want you to know that the head of every man is Christ, and the head of woman is man, and the head of Christ is God." Now, this is a threefold step from woman to man to Christ to God. And Paul begins with somewhat the center step here. The head of every man is Christ. So Jesus is the head of every man, and a man cannot approach God without being in subjection to his head, which is Jesus Christ. Man is subordinate to Christ. Very important point, because a lot of this is going to be about subordination. And I'll mention this later probably again, but subordination is something that it's just part of life. It's we all are subordinate to others. So now to the next step, that is, man is subordinate to Christ, and he goes on and says, "And the head of woman is man." Woman cannot approach God save in subjection to her head, and man or her husband. The subordination of women to her subordination is the woman to her husband. Now, I put this in here for a reason. So before everybody goes sideways on me here, and we need to consider what all this means. And I say this kind of with tongue in cheek. If you were on The View, and I don't watch the program, but everybody pretty well understands what The View is. If you were to read this portion of 1 Corinthians on The View, I have a feeling that you might get some pretty strong reaction to it. Okay. Rex has probably got it right. Yeah. You wouldn't hear it. That's the point. You wouldn't hear it. But anyway, to understand a little bit of what Paul is saying here, you need to understand the whole thing. And I want to go back and look at Ephesians 5, 22 through 24, and it's just a parallel passage to what he's saying here in a lot of respects. He says in Ephesians 5, 22 through 24, wives, submit to your own husband. This is the subordination we're talking about. Wives, submit to your own husbands as in the Lord, for the husband is the head of the wife, as also Christ is the head of the church, and he is the Savior of the body. Therefore, just as the church is subject to Christ, let the wives be subject, let the wives be to their own husbands in everything. Everybody has a part and a responsibility. Christ has fulfilled his to perfection. And men, we are to follow Christ. So Christ is our example. That means in loving our wife, respecting her, giving preference to her, caring for her, guarding her, protecting her, providing for her, and yes, even giving your life for her. That's just like Christ. In everything, we need to follow that example, just like Christ would has done it, and we need to consider that in the way we treat our wives. So we need to do it just like Christ in every step. We need to do it to do our part to fulfill our responsibilities. So this brings us to a consideration. Ladies, how hard is it to be subordinate and show respect to a man doing his part like the head, Jesus Christ, like his head, Jesus Christ? Good thing to consider there. And maybe the response would be, and probably would from a lot of ladies, well, you don't know my husband. Well, that's a different study, and we're not going to get into that this morning. That's a different study. And I guess I could just say maybe the husband isn't following his head the way he's supposed to. So it starts out again right with the man not doing his part. So anyway, now let's consider the last one here. The head of Christ is God. So let's look at that relationship. Jesus is considered the Father's servant. Isaiah 42 and 1 and Isaiah 52 and 13. And in John 17 and 4, Christ said, I glorify thee on the earth, showing his subordination. And then in Hebrews 5 and 8, though he was a son, yet he learned obedience. And then finally in John 14 and 28, I am going to the Father, for the Father is greater than I. And this is Christ saying that. So this really gives you an example of Christ showing the subordination to his superior. The subordination of woman to her husband does not set aside the equality of both male and female. Understand what I'm saying here. There is an equality. An equality in Christ, but he's showing this subordination for the purpose of making the family a viable, successful unit. To this equality, Peter speaks, and he said that we're joint heirs. So when it comes to our salvation, our importance to God and everything, the woman is totally equal. That's it. There's no inequality there. It's just that we have different jobs here on this earth. So, the next section, 4 through 10. Every man, let's see what it says. Yes. Every man praying or prophesying, and note, praying or prophesying, this is worshiping, the way I understand it, having his head covered dishonors his head. Now, this is translated having his head covered, and I checked this out, and I feel very comfortable in saying that this is not a good translation, but almost every translation translates it this way. It's merely to try to make clarification, but I don't think it helps in a way. The true definition here is having something down over his head or having something hanging down. That's the definition. It's not head covering. So what that something is not revealed right here. The Corinthians would have understood what it was, so we need to know. We're going to tell you right up front. If you go to verse 15, it says the hair, and we'll get there. But just to let you know, this something hanging down is a hair. So this something hanging down dishonors his head. He compares to him putting something earthly between him and his heavenly head, who is Jesus Christ. And this is me saying this now, but I would look at this as something that's quite common. In the world of Catholicism, it's common to pray through Mary, the mother of Jesus, to pray to Mary. And we know that this is not wrong, but their explanation is she can speak to Christ who has a lot of pull. And I think that I'm right in saying that. But anyway, this would be a way that I could look at it and say, this is putting something between you and Christ, the way you should be praying, or between you and God. And so anyway, we don't want that to happen. Verses 5 and 6. But every woman who prays or prophesies, worships, with her head uncovered, dishonors her head, for this is one and the same as if her head were shaved. Note, the covering of the head is hair. Now that's me just making this note here. Note, remember now, the covering of the head is the hair. It says so in verse 15. We know that. For if a woman is not covered, let her also be shorn. But if it is shameful for a woman to be shorn or shaved, let her be covered. Let her have hair. The idea is, I just put this in. If it's too short, just go ahead and shave it off. That's kind of the point, one of the points being made here. For a man indeed, this is verse 7, a man indeed ought not to cover his head, since he is the image and glory of God. But woman is the glory of man, and man is not from woman, but woman from man, nor was man created for woman, but woman for man. So man ought not to cover his head, the true meaning again, having something hanging down. Something hanging down. This dishonors his head. So I just read what it said. Now, these are a few comments, and this is going to go right along with verses 8 and 9. The fact of creation. Woman was taken out of man. Undisputable. She was given to man. Undisputable. She was created for man. Undisputable. And she was intended to be the glory of man. Now, this might cause some to bristle, and as I mentioned, a group of ladies that I think would truly bristle over this. But remember that everybody needs to do their part. A woman has her part, a man has his part, and Christ has done his part perfectly. And God receives the glory. So we might put it this way. We are all subordinate to someone. if we went into a factory and we went down on the floor, and we would realize that there would be those that are working on the floor, and you would have maybe a foreman over so many of those working on the floor, whoever they might be, and then you might have a superintendent over them, and then you might have over the superintendent the owner or the company or whatever. And this kind of gives you a line of authority, a sort of subordination that I'm trying to show here. But remember, wherever you are in this line, whether you're the person right on the floor doing the work and putting out the product, or whether you're the next step up, the foreman or the superintendent, what you're doing is bringing glory to the head. You're either making the company more money, doing what's right, or the owner making him money, or honoring him by making a product for him. So I say this to kind of give you the line of subordination here. So verse 10 said, "For this reason the woman ought to have a symbol of authority on her head because of the angels." So again, this is something that's the symbol of authority, again, her hair. And who are the angels? Well, what are angels? And I quickly say, I cannot even start to understand how angels work. And I know Lowell used to talk about, if we could see in the spiritual realm the value and what angels are doing, I think we would just be totally astonished. The Bible doesn't tell us, but it does tell us that they are messengers. And go back to that factory again. Maybe the owner has people that he has chosen to be his messengers to just oversee the whole line, and they report back to him. I don't know, but I'm suggesting this, that angels are messengers. And the reaction that each of us have to our subordination to our higher person is being watched by a messenger. Okay. Yes. Sure. Okay.
The physical man. She doesn't go to her husband and or her, if she's not married, to her father and say, you know, pray to God for me. I mean, she can do that, but I mean, in that sense. And that's the way I've typically taken this verse. Mm-hmm. Because the man and the woman, we know from other passages, as you pointed out, I mean, in God's sight, from a spiritual perspective, they're equal.
For those that I'm sorry, I wish you could have heard all Rex had said there. He's presenting a fact of metaphorical, and I realize there's other views on this, and I'm not discrediting again what you say. My feeling is on what Rex has said here, this being metaphorical. I think that a woman can go to God in prayer, right directly, but if she's doing it and not recognizing where her line is in subjection to her husband, without having subjection to her husband, that's the way I'd look at it. So, in other words, then, In other words, if she's out here and rejecting the fact and saying, I'm the head of this household, I'm the head of our family, and that's in a physical realm, I understand. But if she's taken that position, then can she go to God in prayer and be accepted? Yeah, certainly can. Well, anyway, yes, there's going to be other views on this. I realize this, and I wish that the people on the could have heard what Rex said. Don't disagree with him. It's a hard topic. So we have to move on here. And the next verses are 11 through 15. Nevertheless, neither is man independent of woman. And I'm just going to read this. Neither is man independent of woman, nor woman independent of man in the Lord. And this is kind of what I was saying here. We each have our places, I guess. For a woman came from man, for as woman came from man, even so man also comes through woman. But all things are from God. Men and women are mutually dependent on each other. The mutually dependence for existence upon each other. They mutually depend on existence from each other. In other words, none of us are here with coming from one sex. That's what he's saying. So the two constitute one single real life propagating being. In other words, to have children, it takes a man and a woman. Now, I know you see the movies of how the men are all going to take over the world. That never happens. It's not going to happen. God made it in a certain way. And in this way, he's showing, again, that men and women are dependent on one another. We're here because the two constitute one in making children. And so, anyway, again, a discussion that we could have for quite a while. And so let's move on to verse 13. Judge among yourselves, is it proper for a woman to pray to God with her head uncovered? Does not even nature itself teach you that if a man has long hair, it's a dishonor to him, and if a woman has long hair, it is a glory to her. Her hair is given to her for a covering. And I thought I would just kick this example in here, and this is just an appeal to common sense almost. I'm going to have to hurry with this. But if we came in next week, and every woman came in and she had her hair shorn or shaved, and then every man came in and his hair was down to here, would we feel a little strange? Does that seem to be not the norm? Does it seem like something's wrong there? So anyway, I just add that. So now, but if a woman has long hair, it's a glory to her. Her hair is given to her for a covering. So the argument goes a lot of times that we have to have that hat on or a physical something over the head. And I ask the question, does this woman have a covering? And the answer, from what I understand from what Paul is saying, yes, she has a covering. She has a covering, and it's her hair. He just simply says that. So there's a glory, and there's beauty, and there's an attraction to the hair, but it's a covering as well. And a covering is something that a man looks at. I mean, when I'm talking of the hair, it's something that a man is attracted to. So, in verse 16, but if everyone seems to be contentious, we have no such custom, nor do the churches of God. Now, the custom referred to here is the wearing of short hair. So, this would have been, the way I look at it, a custom with them to have your hair short. And I'll talk about that in just a minute. So the custom referred to is wearing short hair and approaching to God in prayer with uncovered heads. And Paul says, this is not a custom of mine, and it's not a custom of the church. So he's just making it plain. This is not a custom that I have, nor is it a custom of the church that women have their hair shaved or shorn. So let's look briefly at things to consider here. Did I go past something here? Oh, yeah, I didn't have that click. Okay, that's verse 16. No such custom. Now, just some things to consider. And these are things that I've have come up with, but I think they're well, look at them. The hairstyle may have come from the priestess of Aphrodite. And I think this is a good possibility. They had false gods. The members of the church at Corinth were come out of a lot of idolatry, false religion. Paul had converted them. And of course, you know, in this case, customs are easy to bring across. Some of these women may have been converts, and didn't change their hairstyle, which I think is a good possibility. Can't prove that. I don't know. There was an indecency in men wearing long hair. How short is short and how long is long? This is an argument we could spend the rest of 2 days on. I'm not going to go into there. I gave you two extremes, and I think we can see from those. It was causing trouble and division in the church, which is exactly what Paul was addressing here of not having. Remember 1 Corinthians 1 and 10. No divisions. I don't want you to have divisions. Well, this was causing the division. Excuse me. And it is not a command for women to wear a veil or a hat. You can't get that from this here. Now, this is something that has caused trouble in the church. And, you know, some women I know, and I've seen it in my lifetime, very common. They always have a handkerchief, a hat, or something, a covering on their head, and feel like that they should. Now, this is not wrong to wear or not to wear. You can wear it. You don't have to wear it. It's not a matter of right or wrong. The hat is not the covering, or the veil is not the covering that Paul is talking about. Okay. I went through that fast. I realize we could have a lot more discussion over it. The second half of the chapter is something we're very familiar with, so we have just a few minutes left. We'll cover that. Are there questions? I don't mean to run away from. If you have a sincere question, ask it. But I don't see any hands. Okay, that's a hard study. It's a study that causes, it has caused and continues to cause some people anguish. So anyway. Okay. Yes, yes, particularly with the veil. When you have this veil and you come in and you say, you must wear this veil, this hat, as it was in that first picture of the woman, then that's wrong. She can wear it. She doesn't have to wear it. But to bind it and say you have to, it's a command, I think that's wrong. Okay. So now, this is the perversion of the Lord's Supper. I just want to notice a couple of things here. Whoops, I went too far. There we go. First of all, he starts different with this. Remember how he started the other way? He said, okay, I want to praise you. He said, I can find something to praise you. Although he was going to talk to him and give him some instruction. But look how he starts this. Now, in giving this instruction, I do not praise you, since you come together not for the better, but for the worse. This is an important subject. What he's going to cover here now is something that's very serious to him. And he says, he's just saying, look, this is something you're doing wrong. And he goes on to say, for first of all, when you come together as a church, I hear that there are divisions, 1 Corinthians 1 and 10 again, they're causing divisions among you. In part, I believe it. For there must also be factions, that's small groups among you, that those who are approved may be recognized among you. So of all these small factions, some of them maybe were doing it right, and that's how that those who are doing it right could be approved. Finally, there's a few doing it right, but all these factions and many of them are doing it wrong. Therefore, when you come together in one place, it is not to eat the Lord's Supper. For in eating, each one takes his own supper ahead of the others. One is hungry and the other is drunk. And I interpret that as full, but you can interpret it another way, but for each is eating, and each one takes the supper ahead of others, and one is hungry, and the other is drunk or full. In other words, they're just going out, coming in, sitting down, and the rich are bringing their steaks, and the poor are bringing their victuals, and the rich could care less. They just eat in front of everybody and on, and in a gluttonous manner. And he says, what? Do you not know? Do you not have houses to eat and drink in? Or do you despise the church of God and shame those who have and those who have eating, who have nothing? This is comparing the rich, the big ones with the steak, and the poor with the victuals. What shall I say to you? Shall I praise you in this? I do not praise you. In other words, totally different from what he said to start out with before. This is a serious matter. So then he goes to the institution of the Lord's Supper here. And he says, for I have received of the Lord. I just want to make a comment. Where did Paul get this? Paul wasn't at the in the upper room where the other 11 apostles were when the Lord instituted this. So where did Paul get it? From direct revelation, from God. In other words, Paul received, he defends his right, and he says, I got my authority. Christ spoke to me direct through inspiration. So Paul knew just as well as they did. So that which I deliver to you, that the Lord Jesus, on the same night that he was betrayed, again, Paul was not there, but he speaks as though he was there, or speaks the very same as those that recorded it that were there. So just a point to be made that Paul knew what it was all about. And we're very familiar with the rest of this because this is something that we use and repeat at the Lord's Supper quite often, and rightfully so. As I said, Paul is no less than any of the other apostles, and he understands just the same, and he's speaking the very same as what those apostles spoke that were there and witnessed it. So he's saying the very same thing. You do it the very same way. You remember just as they said. I'm saying it again. And so it's the very same. Now, did I skip one there? Anyway, I didn't click that before fast enough there. Anyway, that's what we just said there. And we go ahead. And now, this examine yourselves. Therefore, whosoever eats of the bread and drinks of the cup of the Lord in an unworthy manner will be guilty of the body and the blood of Christ. This is just reiterating what I said before. This is a serious matter. And I think that we need to understand when we partake of the Lord's Supper that it's a very serious matter. I was going to tell you, and I got time. Excuse me. I know of an example of this, and the people eating in a gluttonous manner and not partaking before everybody, but I know that this happened one time. They were passing the tray around of the bread, and whether it was ignorance or a man that was just being rebellious or what, the tray come to him, and this was when we just had the bread, one piece of bread in the dish, and he just took the whole thing and ate it. And this shows a disrespectful man there. And again, as I said, the seriousness of it and making sure that we don't do it in an unworthy manner. And if we do, he's saying, you're the guilty of the body and the blood of Jesus Christ. And I don't know how to take that except you're one of them that crucified the Lord. You're guilty of that. If you disrespect this supper or this meal or this instituted Lord's Supper that is here, if you do that, it's just like being one that killed the Lord.
Well, when they were partaking of the Lord's Supper, their focus was on themselves.
Okay.
It wasn't on the Lord.
Yeah.
That's where our focus has to be, particularly at that time.
Good point. Let me repeat that, Rex, because it's short and I can to the audience. Rex was just saying, when they partook of the Lord's Supper, the Corinthians here, their focus was on themselves. And just like that guy I just gave you an example of, he wasn't thinking about the Lord. He's thinking about filling his tummy. And that's the way they were, and exactly right. He was thinking of himself, not the Lord. So anyway, he goes on in verse 29. He says, "For he who eats and drinks in unworthy manner eats and drinks judgment to himself, not discerning the Lord's body. For this reason, many are weak and sick among you, and many sleep." So I would look at this and understand it is this is a spiritual disease. This is a spiritual sickness. They're weak. They're sick. And many sleep. And sleep, they're dead. They're dead spiritually. For if we would judge ourselves, we would not be judged. If we do it right, then we're not going to be judged. Do it right is the point. But when we are judged, we are chastened by the Lord. And chastening is a good thing. It's not a pleasant thing sometimes, but chastening is a good thing. Something that we need. We need the correction of the Lord. When we're doing it wrong, we need to be corrected. That we may not be condemned with the world. That we're not going to be like the world and be condemned with the world. Therefore, my brethren, when you come together to eat, wait for the other. And if anyone is hungry, let him eat at home, lest he come together for judgment. And the rest I will set in order when I come. So, he's got other things he wants to say, but he'll do that when he comes. Okay, class is dismissed. We got through it.